everyone out to our Zoom Wasatch Front meeting. I do want you to know that we do have cookies here at the office. We'll go ahead and put them in the fridge for our next meeting in a few months, so they're still good.
Well, every once in a while, we have a few people are coming in, so I'm not going to promise that there's going to be any cookies left over. So, can I, Mr. Chair, can I suggest their request?
Andrew, have you put on a few pounds?
What? Why? Because I'm eating all the cookies? Not that I'm aware of, but I might try with all these cookies that Commissioner Stevenson brought over here. Can we give folks 2 minutes just to, because we've got people pouring in right now?
Okay, yeah, we'll just be patient. We'll just be patient for a second.
Thank you very much.
Maybe we need a cookie while we're waiting.
No, I'm going to eat pizza.
Okay.
Just remember, Commissioner said, let's be patient. Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner.
Oh, there's Jory.
Hi, Mayor. How are you doing?
Good.
Okay, we're unmuted now.
Okay, I think hopefully we've got everyone on, and maybe a few more will fall in here in the next few minutes. Again, we want to welcome everyone out. We're going to have Andrea read the roll call real quick with the names listed on the screen, if you would.
Okay, great. Actually, I'm going to go down the members list with those that have RSVP'd and any other elected officials that I see. I'll be doing as well. Should I not read your name and you'd like to be included on the minutes, I'll skip over the WFRC staff. Okay, Commissioner Scott, Mayor Arvey, Mayor Shepherd.
Here.
Mayor Arvey's here.
Here.
Great, thank you. Mayor Lewis.
Here.
Commissioner Stevenson.
Here.
Councilmember Cannon.
Here.
Mayor Walker.
Here.
Mayor Silvestrini.
Here.
Mayor Dolly. Mayor Bigelow.
Here.
Mayor Timothy.
Yes.
Commissioner Milne.
Present.
Mayor Wynn.
Present.
Commissioner Harvey.
Present.
Mayor Allen.
Here.
Mayor Caldwell. Carlos Maceras.
Here.
Terry Newell. Carlton Christian.
Here.
Carlton Christian. Beth Holt.
Here. Bless you.
Commissioner Kamalu. Mayor Ramsey.
Here.
Ari Bruning.
Here.
Representative Schultz.
Here.
Evan Chris.
I'm here.
Mayor Hale.
Present and accounted for.
Councilmember Smith. Clint Smith.
Yeah, present.
Commissioner Frohr. Mayor Schoble.
Here.
Mayor Petro. Mayor Burton.
I am here.
And Councilmember Lang.
I'm here.
Okay, great. Like I please put your name in the chat because I can be recorded in the minutes. And I've also posted a link to the council packet, should you want to choose that to follow along with.
Okay, thank you. And if we miss anybody, you'll let us know as far as that goes on. Now, just before we get into our consent, I believe, and I could be really off base on this, but I believe is today Jim Harvey's birthday.
It is Jim Harvey's birthday.
Today is Jim Harvey's birthday. Oh, you're not going to do it, are you? Harvey, I want you to know I have a cookie here for you. There's a sugar cookie right there. And I'm going to go ahead and just in honor of you, I'm going to sit here and munch on it during this meeting we're having. So
I hope you get frosting. I hope you get frosting all over your face.
Well, I've got a napkin here to wipe it off. So anyway, Harvey, happy birthday.
Thank you.
Pretty cool. So
I feel a little formaldehyde coming on, but it's okay.
Okay. We're going to move down to our consent agenda. First item that we have to take action on is the minutes from our meeting on March 26th. We're going to have someone make a motion in a second.
You could make the motion.
I'll make the motion. We approve the minutes. We can have a second real quick.
I'll second it.
Jeff, move a second. It. All in favor, say aye. Lift your hand. Let us know.
Aye.
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 Okay. Any opposed? That was unanimous. Thank you. The second item is our financial statement check registers for February, March, and April. That was actually, I think, part of your packets you received. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if anybody has any questions. If not, I'll make a motion that we approve the financial statements and the check registers for February, March, and April 2020 and the current budget expenditure report. Can I get a second?
Jeff Silverstein.
Okay, Mark Shepard seconded. We appreciated that. All in favor, say aye. Raise your hand. Make a motion.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Unanimous. Thank you. Appreciate it. Down to item number two. Just real quick, a couple of things I'll cover. Then we're going to refer to Representative Mike Schultz, which we appreciate you being here today, Representative. It's good to get your input and the things you can let us know. A couple of things that have been going on is I think we're all familiar with the economic and tax impacts that have taken place with the COVID-19. We've actually received some figures for the month of March. The fuel tax is down 13% across the board. There's no question that that's an owie in the business that we're in here. We're also going to end up seeing what takes place shortly here as far as sales tax go, which will impact the communities and also the counties as far as that goes. And we'll be looking to see what we're going to have to do once we get the data. Federal activities, we've been working with the delegation. I think some of you, we may have communicated this too, but in the past couple of weeks, we actually sat down with each of the delegations on a Zoom call, talked to them about the not only the stimulus monies that we need, but also about the fast track getting the transportation bill. I believe if I saw correctly, there is movement now on trying to get that bill on the floor and get passed. Andrew, am I correct on what we read?
I think that the prospects for reauthorization of the federal FAST Act, which expires in September of this year, are uncertain. There's been a lot of talk about it, but the ability to reach consensus in Washington around reauthorization, I would predict it's unlikely. I think there's some other folks on this call, Carlos or Carlton and some others who may want to weigh in on this, but there had been some dialogue about the possibility of including reauthorization of the federal transportation legislation as part of another coronavirus bill, infrastructure stimulus, and authorization. The current standing right now is that there has been some cold water poured on the possibility of doing additional infrastructure investment at the federal level at this point. And I think that that makes it less likely that we're going to have a timely reauthorization as well. Can I, Mr. Chair, can I see if Carlos or Carlton wants
Absolutely.
To comment
no.
on that?
Either one of them would be great for your input.
Carlton, do you want to go or do you want me?
Go ahead, Carlos.
Yeah, why don't you go ahead, Carlos?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be real quick. I
I believe Andrew's assessment is where the majority of the people are at right now. There's been too much extra baggage associated with some of these, quote, stimulus, backfill, or even the reauthorization proposals that have been brought forward. I think if it was completely clean, it would stand a better chance, but it's really hard for Washington to do that right now. So I think the most likely scenario for us, especially in an election year, is we're looking towards a continuing resolution. I would expect that we will see that CR push us in and into December. For a lame duck session, probably the second week of December, and whether or not it'll, you know, depending on what balance we have in Congress and in the administration, will be dependent on whether or not that becomes a second resolution. And what that really means for us in transportation is if we only get a portion of the federal year's authorization, a portion of that money to work on. So, you know, we could only have 2.5 months of authorization. And those of us in a, you know, in this business, we like to advertise our federal projects in the fall so that they can be ready to go to construction in the spring. So, but this is not unusual. We deal with this all the time. And that's what I think will happen.
Okay. Thank you, Carlos. Carlton?
Yeah, I would just add in addition to Carlos, on the FTA side, they have in a couple of their funding categories or streams, have had some difficulty getting all their money out the door. Some of that's a staffing issue on their side. Other is just that other transit agency, their projects aren't quite ready. A lot of the larger transit agencies that are very fare dependent really have struggled in these last few months considerably. And so, but the good news is a lot of those funds are already appropriated. So we're hoping to move some projects along and maybe be eligible to maybe pursue some of those funds down the road.
So, Carlos, I'm curious, are you guys starting to see an increase back in your ridership as we've moved into the yellow phase?
For Carlton or for Carlos?
I think that's Carlton, right?
Oh, sorry. we have seen a little bit of an uptick, maybe about somewhere between 3% and 5%, not huge upswings just yet. I think this next week will give us a better sense of what some of that is, but we're trying to think through some of that and how that could come back, and because it's hard to just bring back part of the system without bringing back the whole system, because people have to make connections, so it's a complicated process about how you bring it back.
I appreciate that input on that.
Mr. Jeff Silvestrini, if I can.
Yes, Jeff.
Yeah, so I was just going to say, you know, I was involved in these calls to our congressional delegation with Commissioner Stevenson and Andrew and Lanise and our lobbyists. And I just wanted to let everybody know, you know, at the time that we made these calls, the House had basically just passed this HEROES Act that, you know, our delegation voted against, I think because of the size of it. But there was an element of that that was for local government revenue replacement. So we did make a pitch for the fact that, you know, that funding infrastructure is a good way to stimulate the economy and actually is a good way to address revenue replacement for local governments because of the fact that we, you know, may be required to divert funding from capital projects to other things during the pandemic as a result of the, you know, expenses that we've got and the loss of revenue. So we made a pitch for that. We also, as part of the FAST Act pitch, made an appeal to revise the you know, congestion mitigation air quality program to be able to consider ozone and PM2.5 as opposed to carbon monoxide. And I don't know if everybody's familiar with that, but, you know, that program is kind of outdated given the air quality challenges that we face now. So our delegation was all aware of that. And I think that, you know, when this does at some point come, you know, to the front and center, they are amenable to revising that program to, number one, address the real air pollutants that we deal with, and number two, also maybe update the way that gets funded, because Utah has kind of been shortchanged on that given that it doesn't update the population and we've been a high growth state. So I think we hit on all of those those things to appeal to our delegation, but you know, we just don't know what's going to happen given the attitude of the Senate with respect to further stimulus and you know, and whether we'll get that. But you know, we kind of tried to say that, you know, infrastructure, particularly, you know, infrastructure that has been vetted through a metropolitan planning organization, is a good investment, and it's not just, you know, willy-nilly projects. It's projects that are supported by, you know, broad regional support and all that. So anyway, that's we made the best pitch we could, didn't we, Bob?
Absolutely, with Andrew's help.
Mr. Chair, thanks. Just want to note two things on this. First of all, Lanice sent out to all of you in I think her most recent government affairs update, links to all of these letters and this correspondence that we've been talking about sharing with our congressional delegation. If you haven't seen it yet and want to dig back into it, it's in that email she sent. And I also will note something that we like to talk about a lot, which is the work that we do at the national level is just as collaborative as the work that we do here in Utah. So as we're working on federal issues, we are in very close contact with the government affairs folks at UDOT, UTA, and the other transportation organizations, as well as the private sector chambers and other transportation-related industry groups. So we're coordinating in Washington on Utah's behalf, just like we do here.
You know, Andrew, before we go to Mike real quick, we testified last night for the committee of the legislature. Why don't you give them a little update on that as far as that goes real quick, then we'll go to Mike.
Okay, sure. So, yeah, and I'll, if I can, I'll turn to Representative Schultz directly from this, because as you all know, the state is involved in a really intensive effort right now to look at the state budgets, and given the economic impacts seen already and anticipated from the coronavirus-related recession. I am happy to report to you all that yesterday the Executive Offices and Criminal Justice Appropriations Subcommittee had their meeting and reviewed potential cuts to agency budgets. The state provides $140,000 of ongoing, meaning annual money, to the Wasatch Front Regional Council that we use to match at a 14-to-1 rate federal funds that we get. So every $1 of state money brings in $14 of federal money. And that was considered, but then removed from the list of potential cuts. And several of our members were involved in communicating to the committee about that, including our chair, Bob Stevenson, testifying about that. So we're pleased to see that, but it's a really tough exercise that they're in. So, Mr. Chair, can I just turn to Representative Schultz then to talk more about what's going on at the state level? Representative?
Yeah, thanks. Commissioner, Mr. Chair, Andrew, thank you. As you, everyone on this call well knows, the budgets of local governments and state governments are almost in crisis mode at this point. The subcommittees, as you know, are out there right now, even some of us as we speak, having meetings, looking at budget cuts. We're anticipating having to cut somewhere between $1 billion and $1.5 billion of state money. It will be the largest budget cuts in the state's history. It's not going to be easy, and it's definitely not fun, and certainly it's going to be painful for all of us to do when we're talking about such large cuts. I think as you know, one of the things that the issues the state is facing is, you know, when you look at the three ways the government receives its taxes, between property tax, sales tax, and income tax, the most volatile of the three is the income tax. And it's even exemplified during this pandemic because, you know, so many people have lost their jobs. But, you know, luckily we've had some help from the federal government with additional unemployment insurance and the stimulus money and sending money directly to the citizens.
to help keep the economy moving. The problem with that is while there's sales tax being collected when they spend that money, there's no income tax being collected on those dollars. And so with the state relying on such a large portion of the state budget on income tax, it does make things very difficult. And so as you know, most of you know, the state issued bond a couple weeks ago. The good news is we got an excellent bond rate, 1.16 for 15-year money on that. The idea that with that, that those bonds that we issued is to keep our current obligations that we have committed to. You know, we've committed to building projects. So some of the money will be used for transportation projects. Some of the money will be used for the prison. At one point in time, we were going to pay cash for the prison. We're now going to not pay cash for the prison and pull that money back and bond it and use the money that we were going to pay cash to backfill some of the other holes. And so, you know, the just like all of you in your budgets, the state is facing the same issues, if not worse in many cases. So, not a pretty picture right now, and you know, we're hopeful that things can turn around quick as we get the economy open back up. We can get things moving again and get the revenues coming back in, and hopefully these budget cuts are just temporary and we can get things back to normal as soon as possible. You know, there's a lot of rumors, I think, and different things going around about the state using bonding for you know, economic impact and some incentives and infrastructure projects. I can say that we have not had those discussions yet, and we, until we kind of understand the whole picture of where we're at with the current budget, we likely won't have those. One of the things that the state has done, as most of you are aware, that we received $1.2 billion from the federal government with CARES Act money. You know, a lot of that has been used for the pandemic. A large portion of that will be sent to the local governments. Salt Lake County and Utah County got portions from theirs directly from the federal government. The state is going to send out of that $1.2 billion to the other counties and cities that didn't get those dollars. And so that leaves us really rough numbers, around $400 million that we anticipate will be left over. As you all know, also, there's a lot of strings that are attached to that $1.2 billion, rather. And, you know, we keep getting a little more flexibility from the federal government and how we can spend those. We're hoping that we'll be able to use some of those dollars to help stimulate the economy and get things going again. We're setting that aside, you know, right now, at least trying to be able to do that. One of the things, we cannot use it at this point to backfill budgets with. And so we're in the process of trying to be able to figure out how we can use that, or if we can use some of that money to stimulate the economy. And our hope is that we'll be able to. We'll see what happens and that we from here. But you know, we anticipate there will be future bonding going into the future. I think right now the likelihood of that is to meet the demands of the state. And unfortunately, I don't think there's going to be a lot of additional money beyond that for local projects. As we do move forward, you know, one of the things, you know, transit is something that we have an eye on. We look forward to working close with WFRC and the locals in the projects that need to be done at the state level to make sure that WFRC and the other MPOs and the local governments have input on those projects as well. So I wish we had better news for you. The good news is the economy starting to open back up. People are going back to work, and hopefully we can get things going again as soon as possible. And so with that, Mr. Chair, I'm open to any questions.
Thank you. Any questions for Representative Schull? Okay, if not, Representative Schull, one thing I think that we'd like to do is thank you guys for all that you have done. This is a tough situation, and I think what's cool is that here on this call, we've got cities, counties, and the state, and also staff people throughout the state. They're all working together to try to bring things back together. And, you know, you look at the quality of people that are here working with, you know what, this is going to happen. Just because, you know, the abilities of what people are able to do. So we thank everybody as far as that goes. So,
no, you're 100% correct. You know, this has been a some trying times. Utah is weathering this better than or as good as any other state in the nation. And, you know, while we don't always agree on everything, we figure out ways to move forward and work together between, local, state, and federal government and we appreciate all that you guys are doing as well, and appreciate your efforts to get things open back up again as well. So it'll be good for all of us.
Thank you. Good. So, Mayor Jeff, do you have any other comments you wanted to make? You're on mute.
No, I don't think so. Other than we'll have to see what Congress does, whether they're going to give any additional aid, and I, Representative Schultz, Bob and I participated in like a 5-hour meeting yesterday, committee hearing on reducing the budget. And I fully appreciate the difficulty of the task that you guys have in cutting this budget. And I just want to say, the one thing I learned and you appreciate even more is how much time you guys spend working on this stuff and, making hard decisions and trying to be fair about it. So I was very impressed with the process yesterday. And obviously it's because WFRC, escaped without a haircut. But beyond that, kudos to you guys. You do great work. Thank you.
Thanks, Mayor. Appreciate it. And just one other thing, too, I forgot about to mention. You know, we're seeing several of our agencies that are, having to do more with less. You know, as we look at, social services, and Medicaid and people losing their jobs and jumping on Medicaid. And so we're seeing costs in many areas go up extremely high, go up significantly as well. You know, at the same time, we're seeing revenues go down. And so, while I want to say we are doing better than most other states in the nation or than any other state in the nation, these are going to be challenging times moving forward.
No, thank you on that. And again, just a reminder, we understand Utah County has all kinds of money, so take it from them because we're pleading poverty up north there. So,
hey, Mr. Chair, let me just mention briefly one more thing, and that is the Association of Counties, the League of Cities and Towns, WFRC, and the other metropolitan planning organizations in Utah did in the past week send a letter to the governor and to legislative leadership that essentially noted the fact that, as Representative Schultz and you, Mr. Chair, have noted, the local governments, just like the state, are seeing declining revenues from motor fuel tax and from sales tax. And there has been some, as Representative Schultz said, some discussion about the possibility of doing additional bonding, taking advantage of the historically low rates to inject some additional funding into the economy to keep projects that were already planned moving forward, and then potentially even to accelerate some other projects. To Representative Schultz's point, that discussion about possible acceleration is something that has not really happened yet. And we believe that if it's going to happen, it could happen at some point in the future. The purpose of the letter was essentially to say, if there is dialogue at the state level about possibly providing additional resources for transportation or for infrastructure, please include the local governments, the cities and counties and the MPOs as part of that dialogue so that we can keep working together.
Thank you. Carlos, do you have anything else you'd like to cover with us?
Well, I think Representative Schultz covered the situation pretty well in the budget. Andrew wanted me to mention that, yes, all of our projects are moving forward right now. We haven't slowed anything down. The fact of the matter is we commit our construction program in the fall, like I mentioned. So everything's moving forward on schedule. You know, people talk about going back to work. We never left work as an organization, but we did move about 700 people to telework. And in the light of moving from orange to yellow for the state, our buildings are open to the public 8 to 5, with the exception of our Region 2 office, which is in Salt Lake City, and it's still in the orange status. It's available to the public through appointment. We went through our subcommittee, our budget subcommittee hearings today. We've been working for the last 3 weeks on proposed areas of where we could take the cuts. The representative mentioned, you know, the three funds, but didn't mention transportation fund. Executive Appropriations expects that the transportation fund could see a reduction from the last consensus revenue projection of between $35 million and $100 million, of which 30% of that is distributed out to the cities and counties through the BNC formula. Basically, you know, we don't distribute based on appropriation. We distribute about based on actual revenues realized. And so we see, you know, we get the money from the tax commission, and then we distribute that out to your cities and counties based on what we actually get. So if more comes in, you get more. If less comes in, we obviously send out less money. It was as the representative mentioned, it was a painful process to identify the cuts, because they asked for cuts in all of our line items, which essentially most of our line items are just people. And so we went through that process. I would say the committee hearing today probably came out as well as I could have hoped. There was a great deal of recognition of that, you know, we need to maintain as much of the momentum that we have within the organization. And so, you know, that's really the first step in this dance. This recommendations will then be forwarded on to Executive Appropriations, who will then have, you know, to put the whole picture together. And there's lots of moving pieces on this. So decisions by one subcommittee affect another subcommittee. So that resolution process, of which the representative sits on that committee, is not an easy one. And then obviously that would go to a full, to the full body for final disposition. So we are on a very tight leash in terms of how we're making, you know, we're doing our expenditures. We've had a hiring freeze for the last month. Things such as like on a winter like this, we would have been up clearing mountain passes ahead of time. You know, we rent bulldozers and we're out there clearing mountain. We did not do that. We let them melt out. So we didn't spend the money on that. And so we're just being very careful. I'm very optimistic. The traffic numbers, we watch this every day. We were down between 40 and 70% throughout the state. And we monitor this. And like I said, you know, yesterday, when I looked at yesterday's numbers, we were down by 12%, 20%. So the transportation fund, you know, that reduction I spoke about, I look at it as it's a one-time hit. And so it's coming back. And depending on how the legislature wants to address that, we could manage the projects that the commission has programmed already just through cash flow management. And so nothing gets canceled, but we just cash flow this based on actuals coming in. And so I'm optimistic about how the direction I see things going in. But it's going to be painful next year for sure. So, Mr. Chairman, that's all I have to say.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate that. Carlton, you have any other comments you'd like to leave with us?
Yeah, I just a couple that I would just mention. We've been around and are continuing to make the rounds with each of the Council of Governments and talking about how we will be looking at transitioning back to operations and mirroring the governor's plan, and that helps us gauge levels of service and making sure that it's a safe environment. It's challenging in that some of our system is hit more than others. For example, those that are highly commuter-based, such as Front Runner, took a much bigger hit in ridership than, say, local bus service. And local bus service is easier to adjust on an individual basis, then the others really tie into the system a lot. And so we're trying to figure out how that comes back and There is also the question of how much does come back. I would say a good a significant sector of the working population have figured out how to telework, and how much of that returns back. And we have a lot of long-term contracts with employers that in our past program. And you know, when it comes time for renewal, will they do those at the same level? So there's a number of unknowns there for us. But for the time being, we've been able to retain our workforce. We're not rehiring. And we've been able to, and we've been one of the fortunate things with the diesel price being so low. We budget around $2.50 a gallon, and we're buying it around $1.60 right now. And so there's some savings there that have been helpful for us. Yesterday, we did present to our advisory council, the UTA advisory council, a notion of making some adjustments to our capital budget and trying to advance some projects by doing some of the environmental and the sort of pre-qualifying work on a number of projects. To be honest, we don't right now have a lot of shovel-ready projects aside from the Ogden BRT, which we think is imminent, and we remain very optimistic on it. But and that doesn't mean we have the capital dollars to actually do the projects. But until we do this other work, it makes it difficult for us to make the case and to be ready, should some funding opportunities present themselves. So take a little bit of a leap of faith on some of this work, but we feel like it's in the regional transportation plan. We know the need is there, and so we're going to do our best to have projects ready should opportunities present themselves.
Okay. Thank you, Carlton. Does anyone have any questions for Carlos or for Carlton?
Mr. Chair, this is Representative Schultz. If I could just add one more thing really quick. I just really want to hit on one thing that I know the Speaker and the President have been really clear on, and I just want to make sure that everybody in this call understands. And the legislature is very, very committed to getting the economy stimulated again, and we will be addressing that over the next couple months, and looking for areas in ways we can get the economy stimulated and get the budgets back to healthy levels where they were before, if not better. And we certainly know that transportation investment can help accomplish that. And so, the hope is we will be looking to do some of that. That we'll also be doing policy, looking at policy, seeing if there's policy changes or different things that we can make to help stimulate the economy. And so if any of you have any ideas, please reach out to legislative leadership. There may be another working group put together to try to address that. So be thinking of some ideas to help stimulate the economy, because it'll be good for all of us. Thank you.
Sure, no, thank you. No, we appreciate that. Thank you, Representative. We'll now move down to our item three, which is our public comment period. This is when if anyone wants to give us any input dealing with our meetings and the things that's going on here. Now's your time. We'd like to try to have you keep it around 3 minutes. We need you to introduce yourself and give us your location of your address. So at that point, is there anyone that would like to step forward?
Well, I'll jump in if now's the right time to do so.
Chris.
Go ahead. Not the right time?
You're on.
No, great. Hi, everyone. My name is Chris Peterson. I'm the Democratic Party's nominee for governor of Utah, and I appreciate getting just a couple minutes here to say hello. It's with some real humility that I'm appearing. I recognize that you all are elected officials, and I'm just a candidate, but I really appreciate the opportunity to reach out, and I want to let you know that I believe in teamwork, and I believe in the importance of local county and city governments. You know, my mom was a city councilwoman for nearly 20 years in West Valley City. When I was a kid, she was disabled and managed to overcome poverty and some rough life circumstances and became a city councilwoman and served honorably. I saw her day after day, week after week, month after month, working for her constituents' interests, trying to make a real concrete difference in the lives of ordinary people in our town. And that's in many ways my inspiration for running. And so I want you to know, I'm fully aware that my campaign is a bit of a long shot, but I also believe that we can make a difference, and it may be time for Utah to restore some balance to our state government. And if that does happen, you can rest assured that I will be listening to the comments and feedback that you have and doing everything that I can at the state level to nurture, support, and help our city and county government leaders. And to that end, just so you know that I'm serious about listening to what you have to say, I'd like to end by giving you my cell phone. My personal private cell phone number, if you've got your pen and paper there, is 352-246-7712. It's a Florida area code from when I was a younger man and was teaching at my first professor job. But I grew up here in the Salt Lake Valley, and my ancestors all are pioneers. In fact, my great-great-grandfather was John Taylor, the third president of the Church of Jesus Christ. So I believe in Utah and feel like I would be an effective governor in helping build teams and bringing our communities together. Thank you for giving me 2 minutes of your time.
No, we appreciate it. Also, I see that Karina Brown, would you like to make a couple of comments?
Yes, thank you for this opportunity. I appreciate Andrea and Andrew for communicating with me and with Chris and I about this meeting today. So I believe in the power of community coming together. I just want to share a recent example of Utahns coming together. This past weekend, I was able to make a trip to the Navajo Nation at Montezuma Creek, and we gathered donations from Cache Valley all the way through Moab to take to the Navajo Nation. And we delivered over 5 tons of supplies. And it was just an incredible experience of Utahns coming together for a good cause. And I know that through this pandemic, we will get through it together stronger. And I know that business development is so important in helping get through the pandemic. And I'm a Cache Chamber of Commerce board member. And I'm also the co-chair of their Legislative Affairs Committee. And so I appreciate all of your work as elected officials and the work that you do to help Utah and your communities. The Cache Chamber of Commerce is a member or partnering with the Northern Utah Chamber Coalition. And during the legislative session, we met weekly at the Capitol and had some great discussions about different pieces of legislation. And so I appreciate the opportunity to be a member of that coalition. I also believe in the importance of moderate income housing and increasing housing affordability for Utahns. And I'm a member of the Nibley City Planning Commission. And we just had a discussion last week about accessory dwelling units. And so I really believe that planning for growth is important. And protecting children is also important to me, and I'm the president of the Cache Valley or the Cache County Friends of the Children's Justice Center Board to help protect abused children. And I was one of the sponsors of Proposition 3 to expand Medicaid. And one reason I'm really excited to be the Democratic candidate for Lieutenant Governor is because I really am passionate about voting and the power of civic engagement. I'm co-chair of Cache Celebration of Women's Suffrage 2020. We've been planning events to celebrate the 100th anniversary of the 19th Amendment. We have a celebration coming up on August 26th at the Logan Tabernacle, so you're all invited to come to that. And we've had an educational exhibit that has toured the Box Elder, Logan, and Cache School Districts.
Karina, we appreciate.
So thank you so much for your time and for your work and your service. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, can I make one brief comment, please? I want to say thanks to Chris and Karina for participating. I do just want to be very clear, and I communicated this to Chris and Karina as well, so they won't be surprised at hearing this. WFRC is a non-political, non-partisan organization. They asked if they could offer a few comments to you during this public comment period. We welcome any and all commenters during our public comment period. to make comments that are relevant to the work of the organization. So I just, in case anybody was wondering, I wanted to offer a clarification as to the nature of the comments that Chris and Karina were offering today. Thank you.
No, thank you. Thank you, everyone. We're going to now move down to our next item on the Regional Growth Committee. We'll turn some time over to Mayor Ramsey.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yep.
All right. I appreciate it. We had a really great Regional Growth Committee meeting last week. And, you know, we're all living through this pandemic and trying to figure out all the ways that it's affecting our communities. It's affecting all of our lives, how we live and work and play and travel or don't get to travel. And at our meeting, we discussed with the limited data that we do have regarding the short-term changes taking place. And we speculated about some long-term shifts that will result. We explored really high-level some policy actions that we may need to look at down the road as we work together to gradually improve and recover from this pandemic. Ted Moulton is here with us. And Ted, I'm going to ask if you would take a few minutes to just kind of summarize the discussion that we had at our meeting.
Thank you so much, Mayor Ramsey. I appreciate that. As I jump in, want to summarize a few things about what we've been experiencing, but then take a look ahead. And that is with some sensitivity, obviously. I know that communities are in the middle of a real challenge right now, financially and otherwise, dealing with the pandemic. This space, WFRC, is a good space to look out ahead. And so we're taking the liberty of doing that as we did in the Regional Growth Committee. So this is a summary from comparing before COVID-19, the onset, to the peak of what we saw. After this presentation, I will send a link to a document that is the source of these pieces of data. E-commerce, an increase in internet buying is up 40%. That's bigger than it sounds. And what I mean is that that's across all retail. So it's a really significant increase. Telecommuting, we're living it. We're living it right at this moment, up 40%. That is a huge shift. We're going to talk about the long-term trends. This is just talking about the peak shift that we've experienced over the last handful of weeks. Transit use, our two trustees here today have talked about this. This is a significant challenge for transit. This is partly borne by telework, and it is partly borne by a desire by lots of people to be socially distant. Bicycle use, this is more of an estimate, harder to come by pieces of data for this, but approximately a doubling of the amount of bicycling that we're seeing in our communities. One quick note about this. This is not just people that already own the spandex jumping on their bikes. This is also a large section of new riders. So we're seeing very high levels of bike purchases at bike shops. So these are inexperienced riders testing things out. That's a big opportunity for us to think about as communities. If people are testing things out, does that stay or does that regress? Open space utilization up significantly. Likewise, this is a general, that's an actual within a percentage point number based on trip usage within the state of Utah. There are parts of Utah that are seeing way higher than 100%. Freeway volumes, if you add this up and you focus on the freeway, which tends to be more the longer trip, this tracks to the telework shift. That is down at the peak, about 40%. That's a big opportunity if we can think about how do we start to lock that in. Travel time by auto, if you look across all roadways, a more modest 15%, but I'll tell you, within the planning world, when you see a 15% shift in a short period of time, that is very significant. What does this mean for air quality? This is a derived number. When we look at shifts in travel modes, driving distances, telework, that we approximate, you know, a roughly 40% drop in air emissions, very significant. This is coming during a time where the air tends to be cleaner. You can imagine what this means if it were to happen in months where our air quality is a real significant challenge. Now let's take a look ahead. These are postulates. In other words, we don't know, okay? So these are educated guesses based on people that track this information, looking out ahead, and it's conjecture, but it's educated conjecture, and we'd love your thoughts. And I'm gonna pause briefly after I go through these numbers to ask, you know, what are your reactions to this? Where did we get it wrong? What should we take into consideration briefly? Additional information. So let's start with e-commerce. This is a trend that we've been seeing already, the shift away from brick and mortar retail. Given that it was already planning to go up, an estimate is 10 to 20%. It's before COVID, during COVID, up 40%. After COVID, maybe it's still up 10 to 20% relative to from where it was before COVID-19 onset, the main portion that we especially went through in April and early May. That's a big shift. Think about that relative to especially land use impacts. When demand shifts for something like retail, that trickles down into how does the development community shift over time? Likewise, potentially telework. Lots of people experiencing telecommuting for the first time. A lot of people really working out better protocols, getting technology in place, experiencing the joy of it. I will say that's, I've experienced that. I never thought I would enjoy telework. And you know, I'm one of them that I think, yeah, it's not so bad. Up 10 to 20%, not really sure. That, we'll see how that goes. There might be an issue that could affect office demands over time. This is uncertain, not really sure. Transit use, now, part of the question here is how much of social distancing concerns will remain? How long will those remain? Will that become a new normal, desire to be relatively socially distant? At the same time, if transit use falls away at a significant level, you will tend to see congestion levels rise up pretty high, and that can naturally cause more people to go back to transit. Now, why would we have a plus 10% in the equilibrium high? This is part of the unique phenomenon opportunity of something like a crisis like we are going through, which is it's this natural time where there is a major pause. And it happens in all of these arenas, a major pause to say, should we rethink how we are doing things? Are there major shifts that we should entertain? And with a lot of these things, a major shift that takes advantage of changes that are positive and minimizes perhaps some of the things done in the past that were not as productive could potentially pan out and be a nice, a watershed. That's a little bit of a strong word. Could be, that's part of that plus 10, okay? We'll see how it goes, and I'd love to hear the trustees comment on that. Bicycle use, plus 10 to 30% here. A lot depends on the experience of these inexperienced riders. I'll just note, remember, they are on roads that are experiencing low levels of traffic volumes. What do they experience when they get back into utilizing telecommuting in a roughly return to normal kind of situation? Open space demands, lots of people experiencing the outdoors, perhaps more than they ever did before. That may remain very high. I'll make one note, the geography of that is not just about getting to the mountains. Think about the link between open space demands and telework. If people are having more of their home base being the, you know, their home being the home base of not just their home activities, but their work activities, then the emanation of where they want to recreate also naturally becomes more based on proximity. Something for local governments to think about. Freeway volumes, big opportunities here in shifts in e-commerce and telework, especially in terms of reduction of traffic volumes on freeways. Now, a basic fact about traffic is when some people choose to commute less, others decide, oh, because there is less congestion, perhaps I will commute more or differently over time. And that is a basic fact of traffic forecasting. And that's part of the reason why on the upper end, we see a zero. But there's a real opportunity that we could potentially lock in some of this reduced travel demand over time. You add this all up, it could mean something like perhaps a negative 10% drop in travel time by auto long-term. That would be a massive shift. And likewise, air quality, perhaps we can hang on to a significant, let's say a 10%-ish reduction in air emissions. I wanna emphasize these are postulates, we don't really know, but I think it's useful to take a look ahead and ask the question, after a vaccine comes, when things return to normal, we find ourselves in somewhat of a normal economy, well, we're gonna see major changes. What will they be? And as we plan collectively, local governments, and we plan infrastructure, we need to look out for that kind of reality and be nimble. And so I'm gonna pause as I said I would. What are some reactions that you have? What is missing from the dialogue that I summarized here on this slide of looking out to the equilibrium of 2 to 5 years post the COVID-19 key onset? And Mayor Ramsey, I'll hand it to you to facilitate that.
Thank you, Ted. Does anybody have any questions or any comments that you want to add to this discussion?
Mayor, it's Carlton. The one thought I had is, and I think it kind of plays into a couple of these figures, but then do you see some development and some expansion of population based on the ability to telecommute and sort of the acceptance of it that happens more off the Wasatch Front in some of the communities and our employers more sort of forgiving or are willing to have that? And you know, it's probably not in the numbers that would significantly impact things, but certainly for a lot of the outer communities, it might make might have a substantial impact on their actual growth.
Thank you, Carlton. Great insight. Anyone else have any thoughts on how likely you think these long-term shifts, I mean, could these be long-term shifts, or what do you think we're looking at? Anybody?
This is Robert Hale, Mayor of Midvale. We're seeing development now by developers of shopping centers. They are buying land to put high-density housing nearby their development so that they don't become Amazoned out of business, their commerce I'm speaking of. That's going on right here in our neighborhood that I live in. And it's a real ploy on their part to stay volatile and live in the commerce business and not turn it over to delivery units, delivery companies. So that keeps their commerce alive if they can put high-density housing nearby their shopping centers. We may see more of that. I don't know how that would play into that. Maybe it's already been calculated in.
Good point. Thank you, Mayor Hale. Appreciate that. Anyone else?
Yeah, this is Mayor Bigelow.
Yeah, go ahead.
You know, with all of this, you know, possible change that we're looking at, I know Andrew mentioned that before in another meeting we were in, that it doesn't mean that we throw everything out. Mm-hmm. What we see here is two things, a shift of what we knew was coming, but it's perhaps changed the timeline a little bit. In other words, millennials have been telecommuting and living a little bit different lifestyle, and they now have some verification of that process. We knew it was coming. How much does this change the timeline? Well, we don't know, but we need to watch pretty closely because it's going to tell us a lot about the natural transition of our workforce and of roads and mass transit and everything else. So it will have an impact, but we don't have to start over. We just have to refine our projections and look at how soon this will impact certain areas, especially areas with high growth. West Valley City, it's not going to change much other than maybe telecommuting and mass transit. But high growth areas could see some significant shifts. Thank you.
Thank you for that, Mayor Bigelow. I think there was one other person that I heard wanted to comment.
Yeah. Mayor Evely, it's Lorene Kamalu from Davis County Commission. And I don't really have something amazing to say other than I just am so glad for the experts who are looking at this. And it's fascinating to me, the new equilibrium postulates taking advantage of the positives of this disruption. And boy, all of this forecasting is just really important.
Okay, so Mayor Ramsey, if you're through, we'll move on to our next.
She's not.
And if I could, Mr. Chair and Mayor Ramsey, I have just one more slide, which is the last part of the Regional Growth Committee conversation, and I will be very succinct if that is acceptable.
Yes, please.
Okay, with that.
So we talked about, so what are some local government actions that are based on this look ahead? What do we explore together as local governments? And there's certainly kind of two pieces to that. One is, well, what were we exploring before COVID-19? That doesn't go away. But the other is, you know, what are new things that we explore? I'm going to start with the second. If we have e-commerce and telecommuting, and you know what underlies these numbers is we're not sure, right? We're uncertain. So think about a commercial zone within a community, and that commercial zone allows essentially only retail. How does that zone function based on this uncertainty? And that's behind this basic idea of communities taking a close look and asking themselves, should we broaden and be more flexible with regard to the land uses that we accept in different zones? Do we, as Mayor Hale mentioned, do we start to accept a mix of uses in different areas? Do we essentially say, hey, we can't predict, and so because we can't predict precisely, let's not try. Rather, let's let the market figure out where land uses go. Now, there's a gnarly second point to that. One is the land use. The other is the parking. Think about a building that was used for retail and now is going to be used, let's say, potentially for warehousing. The parking demands are different. Let's say it maybe goes in a different direction. Maybe it goes even towards residential. A lot of times, a developer has a hard time saying, working with a financer and saying, you know, how do we reutilize a building when we cannot provide, meet the parking requirements of a community? So part and parcel of looking at land use flexibility is saying, should we modernize our parking so that we're enabling the reutilization of buildings? There's a secondary aspect to this, which is that we're seeing a big shift in parking demand already because of the Uber and Lyft phenomenon. And so generally speaking, the parking demands that we're experiencing in Utah, in urban America, in suburban America, have changed a lot. And this is a really important time for communities to relook at their parking regulation. That's that piece. Bicycle use, if we're seeing new markets utilize, new inexperienced riders utilize our streets on bicycles, then they're looking for high comfort infrastructure. Are we providing that? Something for communities to explore, something for all of us to explore in the infrastructure space. Open space utilization, aggressive open space provision, not just trailheads on the mountains, are what's the proximity of residential areas to parks as well. Taking a look at, if you will, dusting off the open space plan, looking at how does it meet those open space recreational needs? How does it also help connect people to their grocery store, to places of work? How can people utilize streets for a variety of modes to get to where they need to be? So those are high level local government strategies that are based on that those postulates of the 2 to 5 year flex, 2 to 5 year new equilibriums. And so that concludes that component. Now that's the new space of where we are at. And then there are the existing challenges that we had beforehand. And Mayor, I don't know if you want to comment on that and queue up that piece.
Hey, Mayor, this is Andrew. Can I just make a really brief comment about that? And it's so sort of interesting as we talk about and Ted talks about, and you all are so focused, as you should be, on dealing with the current urgency of the moment. But then we only have to think back like 2 months to remember when growth was the big issue that we were all focusing on, traffic congestion and air quality and housing affordability. And we know, and Mayor Bigelow said this before, these issues have not gone away. In fact, the Kempsey Gardner Policy Institute is still predicting that we will have rapid growth. It may even be that more people move to Utah because of the relative safety, public health safety, and then also economic prosperity that we experience here relative to other places. So I just want you all to know that these issues that are embodied in our shared regional vision, the Wasatch Choice 2050 regional vision, they have not gone away. They have been shaped and need to be shaped, and our responses need to be shaped by this coronavirus situation. So when you are ready to return your attention to looking at growth issues, we, with our partners, are going to be here to continue to help in addressing those issues. Complying with the SB 34 requirements to update your general plans and your zoning, do public outreach around growth issues in a new way given the coronavirus. And we're continuing to work with our partners, the League of Cities and Towns and Association of Counties and the individual cities in Salt Lake County and other counties, Envision Utah and UDOT and UTA. Our hope is that by the fall, we will be back to being able to be together in person, and we're going to do the shared conference of the League and WFRC and the American Planning Association so that we can, with this sort of pause that has occurred, be ready to emerge better and continue to plan for the future rather than letting these issues that we were dealing with just sort of come creeping right back up on us. We have an opportunity to rethink and push ahead and be better in the future. Thank you, Ted, and thanks, Mayor.
Thank you, Andrew and Ted, and everyone who added to that conversation. I agree with Commissioner Kamalu. I appreciate the insight and the broad perspective as we're in the thick of this right now, the long-range forecasting and helping us keep on track with that. Mr. Chair, that is my report.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Mayor. We'll now move down to item 5, which is our Transportation Coordinating Committee, and we'll turn some time over to Commissioner Jeff Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We had our last Transportation Committee, Transcom meeting on April 16th, and there were a few modifications that were made, and those modifications were sent to you along with your agenda and your packet today, and those were approved by Transcom in April. If there are any questions regarding any of those modifications, Ben could go ahead and answer any of those at this time.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Commissioner. Today, as we have opportunity to review a couple items in the Transportation Improvement Program, or the TIP, as the Commissioner indicated, we have a unique opportunity. We have just a couple of months left that we get to wave the banner of the 2025 Transportation Improvement Program. Today, as we review with you a board modification quickly that the Transportation Commission acted on and approved. Then we'll present to the Regional Council a proposed new board modification for your review and approval. And then we'll have opportunity to review new projects to add to the draft programs of the Surface Transportation Program, or the STP, the Congestion Mitigation Air Quality Program, or CMAQ, as well as Transportation Alternatives Program, or the TAP funds. And so, as the Commissioner indicated, on April 16th, a board modification was brought before the Transcom. A copy of that table, along with the signed resolution, is included in your packet. And unless there's any questions, Commissioner, if it's all right, we'll proceed on to the board modification for the Regional Council.
Yeah, if there's no questions by the council as a whole, I would say that we move on to the new modifications that are being presented.
Thank you, Commissioner. So today, also in your meeting materials, you will see a table that identifies the board modifications that are before you for your review and approval, and we'll go through each of these in a fairly quick manner. The very first project is located in the southwest quadrant of the Salt Lake West Valley urbanized area. It's a project on Bangor Highway just north of 114th South. This project is a request to add a cast-in-place barrier on the northbound Bangor Highway just north of 114th South, where several vehicles have left the roadway, crashing into the fence along the backyards of the homes adjacent to the highway. To prevent the vehicles from leaving the roadway, a cast-in-place barrier will be installed along the shoulder of the roadway, as this picture here indicates. This is a brand new project to the program. It is $160,000, and the additional funds for this, or the funds for this project, will come from the Region 2's Transportation Solutions Program. The next board modification is also in the Salt Lake West Valley urbanized area. This is a project to improve traffic flow and reduce the congestion along the corridor and improve safety. As many of you are familiar with, this is a project where UDOT is adding a lane to the southbound I-15, as well as widening 7200 South from I-15 to the west to the Bingham Junction in Midvale. And it's also modifying the I-15, I-215 interchange. Region 2 is requesting that we add additional funds to this project to cover additional costs that were incurred to delays to the contractor. A majority of the delay costs were incurred in overhead costs to the contractor and the traffic control for the additional 15 months of construction. It's requested that we add an additional $18.5 million to this project, giving us a total project cost of $203 million plus. The next project which is the last modification to this update or to this board mod, is an update to the funding levels for the state and federal funded programs, which are amended into the existing transportation improvement program every year in May prior to the new state fiscal year, which begins July 1st. This year, to facilitate the clarity of the table, the various programs versus projects and the programmed versus proposed funding amounts have been highlighted by colors. The dark orange colors, the high volumes, low volumes, and the structures, are programs where specific project lists would be brought forward and approved. The dark blue is also specific projects that would be approved. The light orange color are programs that the amount of funds are programmed for the year. And then the gray columns or the gray highlighted cells are those projects or those funding amounts that have already been approved. The bright green are those that are being requesting for approval, and the yellow is for a modification to the amount of funds available. These programs include funding levels for transportation solutions, including assets like culverts, signs, barriers, and other items not identified in a specific program, traffic operations and safety programs, system preservation programs, and planning and research, as well as public communication. It is important or critical that these be approved each year so that the state has those funds in their programs for the projects as we begin the July 1st year. This would conclude the three board modifications brought before the Regional Council today for your review and approval.
Does anybody on the council have any questions on these modifications that Ben just presented? If not, I would make a motion that these modifications be approved as presented.
I would second that. It's Mayor Shepherd.
Now you're asking. Okay, there's been a motion and a second that we approve the board modifications of the 2020 to 2025 DIP. All in favor say aye or wave your hand or let us know you're in favor.
Aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Okay, that is unanimous. Okay. Jeff, go ahead.
Okay, very good. We have one more item that we need to cover. We've got the STP, CMAC, and TAP projects for the 2021-2026 Transportation Improvement Program. And so we'll go ahead and turn the time over to Ben again to outline those for us.
Thank you, Commissioner. The 2021-2026 just doesn't ring as clear and true as 2025, but it's an exciting year that will be coming forward for all of us. As you'll recall, last year on August, we requested at the Regional Council the opportunity to go out with our letters of intent in September. Those letters of intent were due back to the staff the latter part of October. And then those eligible projects were requested to prepare and submit a project evaluation concept report. Those were due back in the early part of December, and then we began the project review and evaluation period. Up through the end of March, that took place, allowing us an opportunity to present this information to the Technical Advisory Committee, who in turn did their responsibilities well and made recommendations to Transcom in the early part of April, which brings us to our meeting today. As we move through the evaluation process, our letters of intent, the concept reports, and field reviews all provide the data for the project evaluations and scoring. And along with other relevant professional considerations, this information was provided to the TAC committees for their prioritization and recommendation to Transcom. And as Transcom reviewed and approved the recommendations, this information we bring to you today. So in your meeting information, you'll have copies of all three programs, the STP, the CMAQ, and the TAP programs. Those projects that are highlighted in yellow with are the projects that are being recommended. Those dark blue cells are the amount of funding that have been recommended for those specific projects. So as the scores were identified for each project based upon various criteria, congestion, access, safety, and other factors, the other relevant professional considerations, including information that was collected while we were out on our field reviews, the equity of funding across the urbanized areas, the sponsor's project history, how many projects are currently in the program, how have they performed on their projects, as well as what comes with this project if it was implemented sooner than later, which dovetails into the timing efficiencies of the project and or completing the system and, of course, the project cost. Well, in the Ogden-Layton urban area, these dots represented each of the projects that were submitted, and there were 43 projects submitted, totaling more than $155 million in cost estimates. Of those cost estimates, or of those projects, there was over $119 million in STP requests alone against an available amount of $15.4 plus million. In the CMAQ funds, there was over $6 million requested against $2.8 million plus. And in the TAP program, there was $2.7 million requested against $830,000 plus. In the Salt Lake area, there were a few more projects. There were 53 projects, totaling more than $235 million in estimated project cost. There was over $142 million of STP requests against an available amount of $26-plus million. CMAQ, there was over $16.5 million requested against an available $5 million. And in the TAP program, there was more than $4.7 million requesting against an availability of $827,000. So some significant demands in our urban areas on specific eligible projects. Not all projects, but these particular projects. Well, in the surface transportation program, in the Ogden-Layton area, out of the 43 projects, there were 10 projects recommended in the surface transportation program, totaling more than $15.4 million. In the Salt Lake West Valley urban area, there were 14 projects recommended, totaling more than $26.4 million. If you were to look at the tables of the highlighted projects, you'd be able to see this summarized list of projects in the Ogden-Layton area. These are the 10 projects that total more than 15.4. And in the Salt Lake West Valley urban area, these are the 14 projects that were recommended totaling more than 26.4. To highlight just a couple of these projects to illustrate some of the benefits that we're gonna benefit from if these projects are approved. First one would be a project in Davis County. This is in West Point on 300 North. It's a reconstruction project with minor widening. This is a project between 2000 West and 3000 West. It's a narrow two-lane facility with some sidewalk along the north side of the road. This project would widen this narrow two-lane facility to a consistent three-lane cross-section with shoulders, curb, gutter, and sidewalk, with bicycle striping as well as pedestrian improvements. Project estimated cost was $3.3 plus million. The funds being requested was $2.9 million, excuse me. And Transcom recommended the full $2.9 million for this project. One more in the STP program was a project in Draper. This project is on Fort Street between Pioneer Road and 132 South. This project is also a narrow two-lane facility with some sidewalk in a couple of locations, but this would widen this to two travel lanes with the center turn lane with shoulders, curb, gutter, and sidewalk, and improved park strips. This project estimated cost was $4.4 million. The funds that were requested was 3.7 plus million, and Transcom recommended 3.2 plus million of the available funds, and working with the city, they're confident that they can make this project happen with this level of programming for the project. In the congestion mitigation air quality program, there were three projects recommended in the Ogden-Layton urban area for 2.9 plus million. There were three projects recommended in the Salt Lake West Valley urban area for 4.9 plus million. This is a list of those projects, the three in the Ogden area listed on the top, and the three in the Salt Lake West Valley area listed on the bottom. Just to highlight a couple of those projects would be an Ogden project from UTA. This is an on-route electric bus charging structure specifically for the BRT for electric buses in the area to enable the buses to have all day operations. This project estimated cost is 1.5 million. The funds requested were 1.3 plus million, and Transcom recommended the full 1.3 plus million. Another project is a project in the Salt Lake West Valley urban area. This is a project on 3500 South. It was co-sponsored by the Department of Transportation and Magna and West Valley. This is to construct sidewalk all along 3500 South between 5600 West and 8400 West, specifically between 6000 and 84. Project estimated cost is a little more than $2 million. The funds that were requested were $500,000, and Transcom recommended the $500,000 for this project. Now, to wrap up the three programs is our Transportation Alternative Program funds, or TAP funds. There were two projects recommended in the Ogden-Layton urban area, totaling $875,000 plus. There were three projects recommended in the Salt Lake West Valley area, totaling a little more than $827,000. The list of these projects are highlighted in those summary or the scoring sheets that you have, highlighted in yellow, but they are the two in the Ogden-Layton area, the three in the Salt Lake area. And just to highlight a couple of those projects, we have in Layton City, between Layton and Kaysville, there's a very popular trail called Kays Creek Trail. Well, with the reconstruction and the construction of US 89, there will be an underpass that will be constructed with other funds at this location. The intent of this project is to build trail from the underpass to the existing trail system. This project will serve commuters as well as recreational and safe routes to school. Project estimated cost is $790,000 plus. Funds requested were $395,000 plus. Transcom recommended the full requested amount. The last project is a project in Riverdale City. This is on 1050 West and I-84. Currently, there is no sidewalk that exists on this facility. There are schools on both sides. This project would construct curb gutter and sidewalk and bike and pedestrian facilities. It would improve, you can see, excuse me, currently there are bike striping on this, but it would enable enhancements and improvements for the bike and ped traffic in this location. Project estimated cost is $507,000 plus. Funds being requested are $480,000. Transcom recommended the full requested amount. So this concludes all of the projects for the programs. The objective here is to approve these projects to be entered into the draft STP, CMAQ, and the TAP programs that we can begin to develop the draft transportation improvement program for public review and comment later in July. That would be all I have, Commissioner.
Ben, thank you very much. I would especially like to thank our technical advisory committees that go through and review all of the applications and these projects when they come in and vet those and then bring those to our Transcom committee where we have a chance to review those as well. Are there any questions on these programs for the CMAC, the TAP, or the STP as outlined by Ben? You did a superb job as usual, Ben, no questions. If there's no questions on this, I would make a motion that we approve the programs that were recommended by Transcom in CMAC, TAP, and STP for the 2021-2026 Transportation Improvement Program.
Second, Mayor Walker.
Been moved and seconded to approve the Surface Transportation Program as been presented to us. All in favor say aye. Raise your hand to make a motion to us.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, that is unanimous. Thank you. Appreciate both Ben and Commissioner Jeff for your efforts on that. We'll now move down to our budget committee, and we are running short on time. So Commissioner Sean Milne, we'll turn a few minutes over to you to cover this.
Sounds like you're going to run late then. Coming to me, I'm not known for being
It was
shorter.
A big hint. It was a big hint all the way through.
Yeah, I took it, Bob. Thanks. well, you're in luck because I have a concert to apparently plan for. So,
I'm not touching that line at all.
Well, I'd trade you. Anyhow, so thank you, and we appreciate the opportunity. The Budget Committee is, of course, the best part of WFC, and we really appreciate the opportunity to shine here. So we met this past month, and we're bringing only one action item to the full council for your consideration, and it is the Fiscal Year 2021 Goals, Budget, and Unified Planning Work Program. So point, I would like to make a motion, Mr. Chairman, to open the public hearing to discuss the Fiscal Year 21 Goals, Budget, and the Unified Planning Work Program.
They did approve our 4th Street project, though.
They did?
Yeah. It's got funding.
Second.
I heard Mayor Walker approve the 4th Street, excuse me, second this.
All in favor say aye.
That'll be a second.
Aye.
A third, and I.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate that a lot. All right, so folks, in your packet, there are the Fiscal Year 21 Goals, Budgets, and the Unified Planning Work Program. It outlines the activities and goals for WFRC that are proposed for 21. And I want to thank staff for, you know, coordinating that and putting it all together. So without further ado, I will have you know that we had opened it in March for release to COGS and for the public for their review and comment, and there were none. So the material presented here today is one and the same, and we're recommending to the council, if it would please thee, that the budget committee proposes that this be approved. So at this time, I'd like to turn the time over to Andrew, our fearless leader, to make some comments on the materials. I am not a really good lip reader yet. I'm sorry, Andrew. Mute.
Andrew, the phone went mute that you guys were using at the table.
That's because they were probably saying something about the concert they're looking to get some free tickets to. My material's getting real dry here, Andrew. Nobody wants me to keep talking about that, but you're still
muted. Okay, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry about that. Last check. Can you hear me clearly? Yes. Yeah. Okay, terrific. So first, I want to thank the Budget Committee very much for their work, as always, with us in developing the budget and the goals and the work program for the next year. As Commissioner Milne said, there are no changes to the materials we're presenting to you today from what you reviewed and released for public comment in March. Given that, I'm going to be very brief with the understanding and the pledge to all of you that always exists. If you have any questions about our budget, now or offline, We, me, Love of Baumgartner, our CFO, and our whole team, we are always very happy to talk with you about the budget because we feel it is extremely important for there to be transparency and accountability in the information about the use of public dollars. The materials presented to you today also have a lot of detail on the budget and the work program. So with all of that said, the only thing that really is new is not in the numbers, not in the action, but of course the economic recession and COVID that has occurred since we brought these materials to you initially in March. And so I want to take 1 minute and explain the approach that we, WFRC, are taking given the economic uncertainties and recession. You're all experiencing it. We experience it too. The largest uncertainty for WFRC in our budget is tied to our largest source of funds, and those are the federal dollars. At the very beginning of this meeting, we talked about the uncertainty with regard to what's going to happen with the federal transportation program, which expires in September of 2020. There was already uncertainty about whether and when Congress would reauthorize the federal program, and that uncertainty has been exacerbated by the current situation. Will there be additional money that is coming for transportation? Maybe. Will there be a reduction in the resources that are available for transportation and for organizations like ours? Maybe. We just don't know at this point. And given those uncertainties, it warrants us taking a cautious approach to our budget and expenditures. Therefore, the budget we're presenting to you today maintains the levels of projected revenue and expenditure. However, those operate as ceilings, and we have already instituted cost-saving measures to bring down our expenditures because we're not required to spend up to the budget. And that includes delaying or canceling new consultant or other contracts and utilizing our great staff to the maximum extent possible, having a hiring freeze, potentially delaying or canceling COLA or merit increases, limiting travel and training, and generally reducing or deferring expenditures. Our budgetary focus is to continue to provide excellent service to you, to our communities and our members, and to maintain stability for our existing top-notch staff. We're going to continue to closely monitor this budget situation and be in close contact with the budget committee as we go through the year. Just in the interest of time again, I'll just stop there. I'm happy to answer any questions again now or at any point after this meeting or at any point about the WFRC budget and work program. Commissioner Milne, that's all I've got.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. So, sorry, I had to take that call. Troy Walker just ordered 4 tickets.
Commissioner Milne, now we can't hear you.
Are you for real? You missed that joke?
Dang it.
Are you serious?
I can hear
now
you.
Now you're playing.
I can hear you too.
Mr. Chair, can I recommend something? And that is that what I believe that Commissioner Milne was going to do is ask if there were any public comments about the budget because we're in a public hearing. Do you, Commissioner Milne, can you give me a thumbs up to
that
proceed?
That was correct. He nodded, yes.
Okay. So are there any public comments?
Okay, if not, we'll look for a motion to close the public hearing and approve the recommended budget. Someone, we're going to have to read your lips if we can get...
So moved, Commissioner Jenkins.
Troy, you want to go make that motion?
Yes.
Gosh, I love Jenkins. He's awesome.
Yes. Okay.
You bet.
Can we get a second from
Jenkins. From Jeff Silverstein?
Jenkins, Scott, we appreciate that. It's been moved and seconded that we close the public hearing and approve the budget as presented. All in favor, say aye, raise your hand, nod, let us know.
Aye.
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 Okay. Completely. Any opposed? That then is unanimous. We're going to take 1 second and see if we can get some sound back here in our direction because we can't hear anything.
Okay, fortunately, they can at least hear us on this computer. So
in order to keep moving, if you'd like, Mr. Chair, you could make the motion to approve the goals, budget, and work program as proposed.
Yes, and I will do that. Is there a second?
Sean Milne, Commissioner Milne,
okay,
seconded.
Commissioner Milne seconded. All in favor say aye. Raise your hand.
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Any aye. Opposed? That is unanimous. We appreciate that.
Okay. Welcome to Zoom.
Okay. And Commissioner Milne, does that complete the Budget Committee report? It does, apparently. Okay. Thank you, everybody. Sorry for the technical difficulties. I don't know what
Okay, I got some sound back here.
But now we have to have only one of these on.
ID followed by pound. Otherwise, just press pound.
Okay, can you hear us now? Can you hear us?
We can hear all of it, Andrew.
Okay, and we can hear you too, Commissioner Milne.
Okay. Commissioner Milne, if you're through, we will move down to our Active Transportation Committee and Mayor Joe Shoblum.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just going to pull up the screen here. All right. So COVID-19 may have taken the air out of our economy, our entertainment, our lightheartedness, and a respiratory robustness, but it has given active transportation a jump start. Yeah. Bike month is coming to an end, and although we've had no formal gatherings, we've been sporting the Move Utah Strava Challenge, which is to ride 6 hours during the month of May. Well, folks, riders went above and beyond that challenge. We have some great Strava data comparison graphs from 2019 to 2020 to show you that will blow your minds. And to add to those, I don't know if I was just in the right place at the right time or what, but I have some great shots of people you may know out there using our roads and trails, active transportation style. I'll throw those in on and off throughout my report. Let's talk about cycling first. When comparing April 2019 to April 2020, bicycling in Utah on Strava jumped by almost 84,000 trips. That's a 78% increase. And speaking of cycling, here's Beth from the UTA on a jaunt through the countryside, expressing the intricacies of music theory through song. Here are three amigos from the WFRC off on a grand adventure. Just remember, Andrew, when someone asks if you're a god, you say yes. And now look, when comparing April 2019 to April 2020, running, walking, and hiking in Utah on Strava jumped by 126,000 trips. That's a 101% increase from last year. And one more example. Trail counts in Utah County show that April 2020 users are up, ranging from 130% to over 300% from April 2019. Just another example of how people have increased their active transportation through this pandemic. And what better way to stave off a virus than getting some fresh air, exercise, and sunshine. Another cool innovation in an effort to increase safe distances for people to walk and bike, and considering the increase in activity, Salt Lake City has closed certain streets to through traffic, increasing the space and making it more comfortable for biking and walking. As of May 8th, 2020, the city has repurposed portions of five streets, 500 North, 900 South, 600 East, Stratford Avenue, and Wasatch Drive, with other streets under consideration. Decisions on which streets to repurpose came following public outreach that received over 6,200 responses about the program. Bob Herman brings a whole new emphasis to the word active in active transportation.
Way to go, Bob.
And here's Heidi looking very fine, certainly a deviation from the streamlined outfit we're used to seeing her cycle in. Mayor Silvestrini is in his element here. I think someone off inched me woof. Yeah, don't ask me what that meant. I'm also proud to announce that Davis County Bonneville Shoreline Trail is moving forward. The Forest Service Record of Decision allows construction of the BSD on federal land. Davis County is looking to start construction of the segment from Mueller Park to Ensign Peak in 2020. When Jory's not working, he knows how to party, and with the coolest crowds. And there's Mayor Arvey insisting that, "I found him, he belongs to me. No one dares argue with you, Len." Well, folks, that's all I have to report. And if there are no questions, I will turn the time back to you, Mr. Chair Bob Herman.
That's pretty dang good. So, Joe, I'll probably deliver a cookie to your house tonight just for that presentation. So.
I think I deserve that.
So, okay, we'll now move down to our item 8, the Development District Report by Scott.
Well, I think it's a little bit unfair to have to follow that, but I'll be very brief and appreciate your time today. Thank you. The Wasatch
I'm out of cookies, too.
WFRC and the Wasatch Front Economic Development District have the opportunity to apply for additional funding made available by the Economic Development Administration as part of $1.5 billion granted to them through the CARES Act funding. These funds are a grant with no matching component required by WFRC and WFED, and the funds are available up to $400,000 to be spent over the next 2 years on COVID-19 response and recovery activities. And to apply for these funds by June 7th to use them for improving the comprehensive economic development strategies resiliency and recovery section, as well as provide technical assistance to local communities to assist their economic response and recovery. So look for, if we were to get those funds, we should expect to hear a few weeks after June 7th, and then we'll be reaching out to local governments to ask them how we can partner with you on providing technical assistance for your economic recovery and resiliency planning. I don't believe Commissioner Froer is on the call, and I don't have anything else to add unless Andrew has anything, so thank you for your time.
We will now move down to our executive director's report from Andrew.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and everybody. I've got two things which I'll do in less than 1 minute. First, our national organization, the National Association of Regional Councils, has converted their annual conference to an online forum. It will be on June 8th and June 9th. And if any of you are interested in participating in some or all of that conference, you will be welcome to for no charge. And they're going to talk about transportation and planning and economic development in light of the current circumstances at a national level. It's going to be really great info. Andrea is going to send out more information following this meeting, and if you're interested, let her know. And the last thing is I wanted to update you all just to tell you that as of right now, WFRC is still fully remote, and we intend to be through the end of June, and we will reassess as we go. However, our team is working hard and has been the whole time with our partners on your behalf, and we are 100% here for you as we always are to help you in any way that we can. Mr. Chair, that concludes my report.
Thank you, appreciate it. Just as a quick reminder, our next meeting will be held on Thursday, August 27th. We are not sure whether it will be remote or here, but I do know that there will be a few of us who will be remote from Icy Bay in Juneau, Alaska, fishing that day, and we'll see if we can send you a report from there. So with that, look for a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second, all in favor, say goodbye.
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 Thank you, guys.
Thanks, everybody. Goodbye.